And everybody goes quiet.
I know we were jamming on like retro video games. Yeah, we were jamming on retro video games. It was good.
Like Dracula's Curse. Joined, we all went quiet.
I'm good at ruining things as a middle manager. How's my level?
Very low.
Levels.
There we go.
Okay, I can increase my levels, or I can just get really angry and start yelling.
Level up. You're good now.
All right, cool.
Not only are the levels great, but as usual, your lights are amazing.
Indeed. Yeah.
What's your
favorite retro game?
Me?
Yeah.
Solitaire.
My favorite retro game is Apex Legends. I'm just
kidding. Oh, man. Wow.
No, I'm just kidding. Actually, you know what my favorite retro game is League of Legends. I used to play that in college. Okay. No, I don't know any retro. Okay, no, I got one.
What's that?
What was the game that was built into Windows 98? Hover? That's my favorite retro game.
Minesweeper?
Hover. It was like a 3D game, and you just drove like this weird... The graphics were terrible. Everything about it, it wasn't really a game at all, but it was built into my computer. So it was cool. Highly recommend it. Zero replay value or really any value at all, but... still nostalgic. I feel like that's the MO of retro games, is they're not actually good, but they're fun.
No, I mean, I like Final Fight, and if you've ever played Final Fight, and I say like that evil laugh of the the first boss, if you can't think of that in your head, you might not have played that game, but you got that whole like rough laugh that he does.
And how could I ever forget the game that took a lot of my quarters and I'm wearing it today? Galaga.
Yeah.
Gauntlet. All right. Gauntlet. I was just checking that I was still good looking, and fortunately I am.
Delusional as well, apparently.
Is that a casket? Is that a casket in the back that's just covered up?
Actually, no.
That's good.
To be clear, I share your delusion.
Yeah,
it's a good one to have.
It's important to believe you are bigger and better than you really are. I mean, confidence, you know? That's the thing.
If you don't think it about yourself, why should anybody else?
That's right. Damn straight.
Hey, there was a hack in Secret Server. Oh god, hopefully we can stop using it. That's so terrible.
Are we live already?
We are live.
Yeah, we are live.
Oh, just lucky I didn't swear.
Yeah, there's no swearing on this show. This is a kids show.
This is a family show.
Kids all out. Ages.
I just always assume we're live. Even when we're backstage, something has failed. And we're live. It's always live.
Assume everything you say is being recorded.
I see my Kiwi.
It's the safest assumption.
My Kiwi mate is already giving me crap from the channel. Thanks, Brian.
Wait, why are you not in here, Brian?
That's right.
Uh-oh.
You should give me crap Brian's about it. It's role reversal time.
You know, he calls Australia the West Island.
He does. Stop hanging out with your hobbits and come get on the news with us.
Yeah. Hey, look, it's good to see Jay Beal, though. Hi, Jay. You're above me in the Brady Bunch.
Actually, I have it the exact same way. You're right below me in the Brady Bunch. I like this.
Oh, look at that. I'm on top.
You are, and this is awesome. Like, literally three of us with the same haircut. Like,
yeah, that's true. This is the bald section.
It's like bingo.
This is the bald right head line right here. This is the ball. This is the ball head section right here.
Mm-hmm.
There we
the
go.
Ball, the bald and the brave.
The bald column. Yep.
Hey, I, listen, I'm not bald. I shave my head.
Oh, this is chosen. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
You're disqualified.
The bald life chose
there's
you.
There's hair
you
here. It's just real
life.
Short. And I don't know how it would look if it.
It's like,
yeah,
I had
yes. If I grew my
day,
hair
I
out,
cut this one.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
No. If I grew my hair out, it would look as cool as Andrew's. Like, you know, all swept back and moosed and stuff.
Well,
yeah.
You know what? We're glad you made the choice to be bald.
Yeah.
It helps some of us feel better.
Bald is beautiful. What can we say?
There you go.
All right. We're jumping the shark. I say roll the finger.
Are you ready, Corey? Your host
is about to be bald cast. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
Hello and welcome to Bald Hills Information Securities talking about the news. It's April 15th, 2024. Today, we've got the FCC voting on net neutrality, hacking of the EPA, D-Link devices, and all your secrets are belong to us. And we've got our crew of awesome logo shirts. We've got NetWars, Galaga, Packets, Trace Labs, Jay's shirt you can't see. Andrew's just got style. Same with Michael. Ryan, I can't see
your shirt either. Mine's a Wild West Heckin'
shirt,
man.
I have a... This is oh, you got the OG Black Hills. This is technically a Darknet Diaries hoodie.
There you go.
True, okay. And I heard today is the last day to submit call for papers for Wild West Heckin' Fest.
Yes,
that is true.
I better submit.
And your taxes, if you're in the U.S.
Yeah. Oh.
Yes, well, which is more important?
Okay, I can only choose one. Submit it.
You can only choose one.
Or
choose wisely.
Submit a CFP or
you can file on extension for your taxes. You cannot file on extension for call for papers.
Yeah. No, this is not the advice of a certified financial planner.
I just want to say Griffin Sec is saying exactly what I'm saying. Like, wait, CFP ends on tax day? That's just cruel.
I accidentally submitted my taxes to Wild West Hackin' Fest, and then I submitted my talk to the IRS. So,
and now I'm getting audited.
Everybody's confused.
No, yes, now the IRS is going to have you come in for a talk. They want you to come in to do a talk.
That's how that works. Right.
Yeah,
I think the end of that joke is that all I got was a lousy audit.
Turns out the talk was on using Markov chains to discover cryptocurrency money laundering in tax evasion.
The AI was like, thank you for your submission. It has been accepted. Oh. Wait, what? I'm confused.
How stochastic of you. How stochastic.
All right, let's talk about actual hacks. So I feel like net neutrality is coming back. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we're talking about this again. I don't know if anyone saw, I don't think it's in the articles, but the T-Mobile thing, did anyone catch wind of that? How they're going to be fining? I'll get an article link, but I guess let's talk about the FCC first. The vote's coming up. These rules were set up for, what, during the Obama administration? Somehow we made it, what, 10-plus-ish years until we're talking about it again?
I'm assuming.
They were instated during Obama, and
they were repealed during Trump.
Gotcha.
So they're trying
somehow
to bring
this
it back.
Is yeah. It's really sad that net neutrality could end up being, you know, a partisan
real
issue.
Thing.
Sure never
it,
seems
it
like
is.
It peaks.
But this is something it needs to come back. It should have never went away.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what are the actual, like, does anyone know what the actual, like, effect on my internet is? Is it just that they can sell fast lanes or whatever? Like, how does that
My understanding of this is with net neutrality is this is basically the law that allows your internet company to limit your bandwidth to your house. This is the law that allows them to control how much comes in and out of your house at any given time during the day instead of giving you that 5G internet you're supposed to get all day long.
Well, it goes further, though.
There is a lot more to it than that, but that's
right.
The basics.
I mean, there's a pay-to-play aspect, right? Because all network providers have the ability to implement quality of service controls. And so they could take larger bag of money from mega tech company A and say, okay, I'm going to prioritize your traffic, right? So net neutrality is about taking it back to a flat level playing field, is my understanding, so that the pay-to-play aspect goes away.
I think they would still be able to use QoS because I think QoS is like required, right? Like if I make a VoIP call, I definitely want that prioritized over, you know, my cat pictures loading.
Well, you're right. I mean, they have to.
Yeah,
it's a very, very, prioritizing.
It's a very, very sensitive issue because I ran into it in past life, and it was in the university space where everybody was very, very excitable about net neutrality and wanting it to be the law of the land, you know, because of faculty research reasons. But it's still a big deal, I think. And, you know, pay to play is it's not fair, in my opinion. So I agree.
Yeah, it's
the
basically
FCC's clearly in support of it.
So,
yeah,
well, for now, my internet bill.
So when it was repealed, it was only repealed at the federal level. Basically, the way it got repealed was to say, okay, we want the states to each make their own decision about net neutrality.
Classic.
And yeah, no, I know, totally. And it's kind of screwy because you go to smaller and smaller parties and they have less and less ability to do anything
right.
At that level. Goodness. But the net neutrality, just like Joff said, it's been about being able to prioritize and deprioritize one protocol or one site over another based on who's, you know, based on who's paying you. So you can say, okay, Google's going to load faster than Bing, and it's going to load so much faster than Bing. And these aren't really small. There's no David and Goliath here, but because it's going to load so much faster, people just get annoyed and decide not to use Bing. And it'll be nothing that Microsoft can control. Technically, it'll all be a question of paying the right party. And it's also been used at the protocol level. So, you know, what I can imagine is, you know, the worst case is you could say, okay, listen, we are, you know, we're your ISP. We operate a VoIP service that we're selling. And now we're going to slow down everyone else's VoIP service so much that it'd be too painful to use. Mm-hmm. So it's exactly that. It's just finding another revenue model and one that would really hurt, can affect all of us badly.
So I'm so curious about the real challenge.
Something.
It's not.
Yeah.
Not
so simplistic, I'm curious, like, we've been without this for like 6-7 years now. Yeah. Are there any cases that anyone knows of where that kind of thing's happened? I'm just like, I'm not advocating for one way or the other, but I'm just curious. Have we run into that situation where some service is being prioritized unfairly over another service or website?
Well, it's a matter of an awareness. It's a matter of awareness, and very few people would know, because the tendency in the United States is to oversubscribe on bandwidth as a general rule.
That's and true, yeah.
If you're oversubscribed, you're probably not going to know for the most part. The other thing that makes the issue more complex is the physical infrastructure in terms of fiber optics running around the place, because what providers can choose to do is say, okay, well, I'd rather just strike up a BGP pairing with Google directly so that I don't have to draw that Google traffic through the tier one ISP that's, you know, over here that's charging me more, right? So the issue becomes multi-layered and quite complex. But the oversubscription situation in the United States makes it so that most people would not be aware of a degradation in service unless it was a severe, you know, like, you know, so many hops between you and streaming service X, for example, where you started to actually notice the video degradation. I mean, and video would be the place you would notice it the most, right?
Well, I got one. Does anyone have a data cap? Anyone? No?
I was just about to...
Yeah, I mean, like, that's obvious. I pay extra. I pay $30 a month extra to not have a data cap. Otherwise, it's 2 terabytes a month. So that's
the internet's
only...
not cool, right? I mean,
that data cap is not allowed if you have net neutrality. So that's a great example. Like, the other thing that would be banned would be the like router subscription fee stuff of like, mm-hmm. oh yeah, you can definitely just pay me $8 a month to rent a $50 modem for like 5 years. Or
that was
like,
I was gonna bring that up. That net neutrality it also encompasses legislation regarding running your own equipment inside of your home. Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't know how many of us have gotten a fight with our ISP, and I have in the past, where the customer service person on the other end of the line said, "Why would you, for any reason, want to run your equipment in your own home? Why wouldn't you want us to be able to come in?"
I was
sudden
urge my middle finger to come up when he said that, Andrew.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Look, let me just answer, because I am a security specialist and I probably know more than the guy you're going to send to my house.
Well, they don't know what that is. It's like it's like the Home Depot TikToks where it's like, "I know more than you," and they just walk away.
Right.
They really just like that on the other end of the phone. But you know, I've been running my own gear, you know, north of the cable modem for so long. And then I feel like this is the first period now where we have these modems that are consolidated modems with Wi-Fi routers inside of them. The ISPs don't even really want you to have that access anymore. They want to just
harvest your DNS data. Yeah,
exactly. They want all of it.
Yeah.
And trust me, I get into issues now because I have a BSD firewall. And they're kind of like dead set against that. So it's always an issue.
Yeah. You know what? I think they can grow screw themselves, frankly. I mean,
you know, I think we can go ahead and say anything that anything that's going to hurt ISPs, I basically support it. So
indeed.
I don't know if anybody else a few years ago to have a direct relationship with my ISP who dropped me a fiber and understood who I was, what I did, and would never send me through the level one help desk. If I called, they escalated it immediately and they just gave me an Ethernet handoff. It was a beautiful relationship, right? So
yeah, some people are lucky, everyone else is screwed.
Luckily, my but cable company lets me use my own stuff, thankfully. So.
Yeah.
But what I find hilarious now is the buy your own cable modem stuff, which you buy the cable modem, and I looked into this, and you don't get your fee, you don't pay a fee anymore to your ISP, but the ISP still has control over the cable modem that you just went ahead and purchased. You can't do the firmware updates, you can't do this with it. It's just that you're just not paying a fee anymore, and instead you've paid out for the modem itself. I know plenty of people that have run into that one now.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm pretty extreme in that I think that like public, you know, nationalizing or whatever you want to call it, internet is probably the way to go, right? Like a lot of regional places have done this of being like, hey, your internet sucks, all the offerings suck, so we're just going to like make our own little small town internet provider and make that sort of a public service. Which is the other big thing about net neutrality is that if, you know, if this was put back in place, it would essentially mean that, you know, the internet is open now. They can't argue, or that, you know, companies can't lobby. It's essentially seen as like a public utility, right? Which is 100% classifies it as a public utility, not as a luxury, you know, luxury service that you have to pay extra to get, or you know, have to go through an open company or a private company.
A big issue.
And all the things about data protection and all that stuff.
Censorship is a big part of this conversation as well, which I think is really important to note when we talk about treating internet as utilities versus large providers that might be incentivized by various governments or be subject to executive orders to remove certain content.
Yeah, totally.
Where I live, I run into an exclusivity place or issue as well, that Maryland is kind of split up so that only certain areas can use certain cable companies here. So if you
they
live
gerrymandered
in a
the ISPs? That's just impressive. Yeah.
You have to go with a certain company if you live in a certain area because they're the ones who own the cable lines in that area.
That's crazy.
I mean, where I live, it's you're effectively locked in.
And kind of become a second option. So if Fios has wiring in your area, you can use either whoever you have to or Fios now. But for a long time, it was like you had one choice wherever you live, and that was it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's... I don't know if it's if you're saying it's officially required that there's only one, but I think where most people live, you probably only have one option, one sort of terrestrial wired option, and then maybe two if you're lucky. But now,
in Maryland,
you know,
there's like three or four, and they've legitimately split it up so only one can serve each area.
It's generally like whatever cable internet, and then bandwidth poverty through DSL. And then literally anything else that comes from the sky. Yeah. Those are most Americans' options.
Yep. All right. Let's move on. Anyone have any hot, spicy takes? We can talk about this T-Mobile thing that I sort of teased a little bit if anyone wants to. I dropped the link in chat for everyone, or we can move on to something else.
I'm excited about the Delinea, issue server that came out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Secret server is pretty cool. I was just looking. So it's basically Johnny Yu. He's hitting the he got secret server on prem and set it up, and he spent some time finding, and he found a hard coded key for encrypting and decrypting, or for verifying tokens. And so you could reach this API. You can reach an API and basically dump the secrets out of this. The work he does in the article is actually really cool. The article's really, you know, just really well done. What I was kind of a little shocked by was I got to the end of this article where we see all these dates, and it's like 2/12. He reaches out to CERT to coordinate responsible disclosure with Delinea, and then it's, you know, the next week Delinea hasn't. CERT says Delinea hasn't responded. Next week, CERT says Delinea hasn't responded. The next week, same thing. 2 weeks later, still, you know, Delaney hasn't responded. Finally, CERT, you know, extends their disclosure deadline out to 2 months after it's been reported. Yeah. And they disclose it on 410 on April 10. On April 12, Delinea, you know, does acknowledge the finding. They don't, I don't know if there's just no CV or whatever, but Delinea's finding doesn't mention the researcher at all. Doesn't mention CERT at all. It's kind of, I was a little disappointed. It really felt like one of these issues where it's like, it's one of those places where the full disclosure is what ends up getting the vendor to respond and offer some protection potentially to their customers.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
It's sad that there are still vendors where it comes down to that.
I gotta say, having used this product, I'm not surprised because it's probably the most annoying password manager on the planet to use, in my opinion. Everything is like 15. Everything that you want is only 15 to 25 clicks away in this application. It's unfortunate. Imagine a company that got away from LastPass and then moved to Delinea, and now the same thing was happening at Delinea.
They would be done if that happened.
The former CEO of Palm is shuddering right now at the three clicks rule. Does anybody remember that the CEO of Palm was just enamored with this idea that anything in the interface should only ever take three clicks to get to it? If it took four, it was a failure.
The CEO of Palm, as in like Palm Pilot?
And yeah, Palm 3.
Nice.
Palm OS.
So I'm hearing three-click neutrality legislation coming.
Don't be surprised. Yeah.
There's a lot to chew on with this password manager thing here as well, which is kind of interesting because, like, one, you know, as a consumer of stuff, why would you use a password manager that's written in a platform that has to run on IIS and Windows in 2024? But, like, if we just put all that aside, the entry point was a SOAP API. Let's just talk about that for a minute. Ouch. So, like, how many consumer tools
have
for
SOAP
these
APIs?
Secrets are, yeah, I would love to look at the aggregate set of data and know for this feature, which is legacy support, SOAP or Whistle or whatever legacy you have, what percentage of the market is actually using that feature that was the entry point?
Yeah, probably like less than 1%. The Microsoft model always have vulnerabilities related to less than 1% of your user base.
Well, that's
how they
broke
off
the upgrades.
I will say, yeah, reading this as a pen tester, though, it is really interesting to conceptualize taking almost any of these legacy support interfaces of, you know, a SOAP API, enumerating it and finding issues like this. It seems like a repeatable methodology for sure. I'm sure there's more to come where I'm going with that. As we know, vulnerabilities are always discovered in threes. So there's two more. stay tuned. We'll talk about the next two on the next episode.
It is somewhat interesting, and I do love that they post the disclosure timeline. I just want to stress this because I don't think we stress it enough. If you are doing this kind of work, please, as often as is possible, post your disclosure timeline, the initial contact with the company, you know, as many follow-ups as you had. And that is always interesting, I think, generally, to see how long it really takes to remediate this stuff.
Yeah, nice. I think that's really
good. They also had a cloud security incident, too. So.
Yeah, I wasn't touching that one yet, but yeah, I just want to underscore Andrew's point. Like, yeah, please keep posting your disclosure timelines. Look at those disclosure timelines. You know, I think they might give you a data point that's helpful in choosing what you're gonna buy for your org. And
yes, totally.
I'll let someone else hit the cloud side.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is, you know how we said vulnerabilities come in threes. This is number two. The third one is yet to be seen, but the same company, Delinea, who probably is getting mined for 20% year-over-year IPO profits right now, has also had a mysterious outage on Friday due to a security incident, in quotes, which is always a fun two words to see. You know, you go to the status.delinea.com site, it just says, we are currently investigating a security incident, and there may be service disruption. We're reaching out to inform you about it. Yeah, I don't know. Same company, same product. One is self-hosted, one is cloud-hosted. So I wonder if they might be running the same software in the cloud that they're running on-prem.
Nobody ever does that. Nobody ever does that.
It says the vulnerability is in the SOAP API and not in the REST API. It's only a data point. Doesn't prove anything. But
so the security engineers at Delinea were sitting there going, hopefully they don't guess the URL. Hopefully they don't guess you the URL. Hopefully they don't guess the URL.
But you know what's funny? You'd be surprised how many companies actually think like that. They'll be like, oh, they'll never find this. They'll never see the URL. Yeah, yeah. They'll just think, they're like, oh, we have our web app locked down. We don't have to think about the API. They'll never even find that anyway. It's probably hidden. It's legacy. That's usually the thing. It's legacy.
And then the fix was just using mod security to redirect everything with a 302 to the root page.
Yeah.
How in this day and age do people not realize if it touches the internet, somebody is going to find it?
It's a lot of people that don't realize that.
The internet at this point isn't a new thing anymore. It's been around. It's a huge part of our life. This is nothing new, people. Like, if it's on the internet, somebody is going to find it. That goes for everything.
Well, I mean, look at phones. How many people look at? You can imagine. I wish I could be a fly on the wall to see how many people just allow everything on their phone.
Oh, indeed. And they don't realize that's another good point. Is now your phone touches the internet. Mm-hmm. So, and for the most part, if you have an Android, your stuff's being backed up on Google Cloud. So you take a picture, it's touching the internet.
Uh-oh, the iPhone
really
folks
think
are coming
about
after
that.
Oh man, why'd you have to bust my Monday? Come on.
Hey, like I'm an Android user myself. Like I use it too, and I have
He's
that
holding his
off.
Pixel.
I turn the sync off on mine just so my stuff doesn't automatically touch the internet. Mm-hmm. But like everything nowadays, as soon as you get a new phone, if it's an Android phone, enter your Google account so we can link everything.
Yep. Come on. Let us sync it all for you. Let's go. We want it.
And you have to put your Google account in to even get it to work. So then you have to go through that long list of freaking things that it's going to do. And you're darn right. Almost everybody out there is just like scroll, 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 click.
Yep. Click, click, click. Allow, allow, allow. Hurry up. I got to talk to this person. Allow. Yep.
Right.
The interesting thing about the cloud write-up here is that it's basically a hit and run, and there's no real details about any impact to their actual cloud services. So this is basically just like I popped an application, and there's no mention of the cloud service provider. There's no mention to any like lateral movement or other data that's compromised. It's literally just like, hey, we had this service that happens to be running in insert cloud here. It could be anything. Like this could be AWS, Tencent Cloud, GCP, Azure, whatever. We don't get to know according to the bulletin. And so I would suspect that there's probably more here that's just not part of the write-up or the disclosure.
Yeah, I think we'll have to keep our eye on this one. I would guess that they self-imposed this outage to patch the same exact software that was on-prem and in the cloud. That's my guess. They literally
you think there was a quick, somebody get the Band-Aid. Slap it on.
That's my guess. All right, let's talk. I kind of wish Wade was here to talk about this, but I you know, I'll allow everyone else to discuss it as well, just to be nice. So apparently CISA has released a next gen analysis system. I gotta say, okay, it looks like it's for malware analysis. It's their internal tool that they use, and now they've published it. But I gotta just take issue with calling something next gen at this point. Like seriously, we're still calling things next gen? What does it do that's next gen? Does it not have a SOAP API? Like,
I think next gen just says it's about the generation where Star Trek Next Gen happened.
Trek Next Gen like that. That was awesome. Like
that's the gen.
The only thing they missed is they forgot to put ML and AI enabled. Right, and if they'd done that. There would be no arguing. It would be a good tool.
You know what? Web 3.0 is secure.
No, I think they did things right here. They called the product Malware Next Gen.
Yeah.
They actually put Next Gen in the title instead of just calling it a Next Gen item.
I know. That's my problem with it. It's just called Malware Next Gen. That's like
I can't pick on them too much. I think CISA
has the government. I know the government's not great at branding, but I mean, we did come up with the U.S. dollar. That's kind of cool. It's green. It's got little designs on it. I don't
even
know.
Has, even
I understand magic. Next. I understand next month we've got Dollar Next Gen coming out.
Dollar Next Gen? Is it like Canada's money and it's plastic and you can shine a laser beam through it and like have numbers coming out of it and all kinds of weird stuff?
It's AI and ML enabled and it's got a blockchain on it.
We're going for coins. We're going for coins for the smaller delineations for the, for delineations.
So I guess, and I for anyone curious as we banter about this, I'm guessing what this is, and I don't have access because it just opened up, and before that it was only .gov and .mil organizations. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's just government-provided virus total. Like it's like CISA total, basically. which is kind of cool, I guess. I'm assuming it's like, this is their response to like, please stop sending us emails with like ntdll.dll. Like, please stop submitting samples for things that we already know about. Like, yes, it's not malware. This is just used by every program. So I'm guessing you can upload it on their little web interface and it'll probably give you a little green checkbox and say, this signature does not match any known threats. And then you can stop emailing CISA. That's my guess. And I just made all that up, but I'm pretty sure it's about 32% accurate or better.
I'm just happy for them to create tools for us.
And if you're a CISA employee right now who's boiling with rage, please send your comments to relentlessforwardprogress@blackhillsinfosec.com.
And with the soap URL included. I'm sorry, I had that out there.
Don't forget to include the vulnerable API call.
We need to know where the vulnerable APIs are.
Yes, come on, give it up. Out with
what
it.
It requires auth, but only on the front end. The back end is completely unauthenticated.
I mean, at first I thought it was going to be on-prem, some kind of on-prem thing. I thought of the success that's happened with Ghidra, which definitely seems to be a good case. I mean, hey, I'm only going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's see how the reviews come out. Like, you know, people are going to start using this, and we'll find out if it's really helpful or not, but I like that they're taking an action.
I do like when you go to sign in, it says in all caps, do not process classified information on this system.
Yeah. I think this is them like tenuously having stuff where you can do that malware analysis in a lockdown environment, but then also opening that up to a little bit of input from like the public, because it's like you have the public researchers at large, like your hybrid analysis that has all those data samples, and they're like, yeah, but we have all of our data samples over in this little bucket over here. How do we check those things? I think this is kind of merging that a little bit together and having that sense of comfort for, yes, you can use this one, but not upload. Don't upload compromised files to VirusTotal, please.
Yeah, I guess I'll... If anyone ends up using it, please come on the show and talk about your experience. But I guess I need to tell my customers, I always tell them not to submit to VirusTotal. Should I also tell them not to submit to MalwareNG or whatever we're calling this thing?
It's totally safe because it's next gen.
It says .gov, so it's safe, right?
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
The MalwareNG plus.
If and when they get compromised, that's going to suck.
Big 6 months from now, CISA is going to come out with a premium version that's $14.99 a month for up to 1,000 samples.
Yep.
And then that's how they're going to monetize it.
And will include free credit monitoring as well. Uh-huh.
Is there someone being like, we got to run CISA like a tech startup. Come on, let's hire 1,000 people, get VC funding for this, and then run a subscription model until we go bankrupt. It'll work.
They probably had one of those meetings where they said, how can we be more like Black Hills Information Security?
We don't have any malware analysis subscription services that I'm aware of, I hope.
I know, but no lapse on that one. People have been having meetings like that. I'm actually not joking.
Oh, God.
Really?
Close it down. We had a good run.
That's it. We're done. We're forking the company. Just kidding. Vicious rumor.
We're going to have BHIS and BHIS Classic.
I feel like it might be a little ageism in there. I'm a little worried.
We didn't call it BHIS. What would it be called? Like golden years BHIS golden or something? Golden oldies. We only use CVEs, but from before 2000. Okay.
Right.
Oh my God.
Because yeah, MSL 8067 for the win, baby.
True. Let's go CVEs up to 2010. I feel like
8067 continues to win. It's scary. But it's one of those that you remember. It's one of the few CVEs you memorize the number for.
Oh, man. 086067, man.
Time to break out Blaster Code.
That's too old.
So it's a limit to the legacy.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait. Can we go to that in Nimitz?
It has to run on. Honestly, though, like, you know, when is the odometer of like the internet going to roll over and we're just going to start over? Like, think about like all the rules of like firewalls, like, you know, like the blaster rule that's been there since whatever 2000. When was blaster? 1995 or something?
2003.
Okay, like the rules that are currently baked into firewalls to like prevent Configure and Blaster are eventually going to like drop off the bottom of the database, right?
There is the rollover date is January 19th, 2038.
The apocalypse.
2038. Yeah.
That's when the 32-bit time register rolls over.
Yeah
you're talking about the apocalypse.
Oh boy.
Apocalypse.
Yeah, well, we'll have a fun little doomsday version of the podcast right before the apocalypse. We'll sell RFC 1918 patches and all kinds of fun little things, you know.
We're going to have a party no other, baby.
We should fill in a little bit of background, like epoch. So Unix time is done in seconds since January 1, 1970.
Yes.
That is when, on a Unix or Linux system, that is when time somehow began.
Goes back, yep.
Yeah, I mean, with the party for like that whole like apocalypse, like I'm adding 14 years to my current age, and I'm going 14 years from now, like I'm not going to care. Like it's going to be like, you know what? This is a problem for somebody else. We are telling you now in 2024, like all you youngins that are like coming in and watching this thing, this is going to be your problem in 14 years.
Oh, yeah.
Like
I'm one of the golden oldies. I'm not even going to say how freaking old I'm going to be in 2038. But let me tell you what, my give a fuck level is going to be right about here when that happens.
I have calculated I will be 58 years old when that happens.
Yeah.
And yeah.
You're going to be retired.
Like, yes. You're going to go on Lethal Weapon and be like, I'm too old for this.
That's what they're going to do. That's what it's going to be. It's going to be seriously a bunch of people raised on TikTok calling up the old guard and being like, hey, do y'all know how to like make an integer signed or what? Like, I'm writing some Haskell here. Can you help?
And they're going to reach my old school answer machine with the. It's going to happen.
I give a fuck level. I'm going to say, get off that one.
Yeah, you have to call. Yeah, to get in touch with BSD Bandit, you have to first of all be using a BSD user agent to even go to his website, which is currently using Blink and marquee tags to say his phone number, and then you have to call him up on a landline. Somehow you have detections. It only works if you call on the landline, and then it just rings a little red phone on his desk. Apocalypse support line.
And I have on like a Hawaiian shirt with little Mega Man emotes, little Mega Man things across it, so I can be ready for it.
Oh man!
Wow, I'm really impressed that BSD Bandit's only going to be 58 because I'm just not even going to say I'm going to be well and truly retired. I'll just say that.
Yeah, all good, man. Good. You'll still be a solid programmer, I'm sure.
And you know, the same thing's going to happen that happened with Y2K, and it's going to hit the year before, and everybody's going to start freaking out finally, going, oh, wait, we need to fix this.
Oh, the BSD community is definitely going to be worried, because I personally know some folks, they're running 30-bit versions of the BSD operating system. We know this.
Yeah.
Think about it. You know, we're all ADHD and still going to procrastinate on.
Well, think about all those little embedded devices that are out there. Yeah, uh-huh. Shit's gonna break.
Uh-huh.
It's fine. They run ARM. It's fine. I'm sure there's no apocalypse in ARM. It's fine.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, next gen.
Y2K actually caused a boom in the demand for COBOL programmers at the time. So.
Woo!
Yeah. Oh, man.
There's still a demand for COBOL programmers. They're moving that stuff to Lambda functions in AWS. Mm. Like, that's how long-lived Lambda is. Now there's a DevSecOps cloud role. It's just like, I'm going to lift and shift this stuff into serverless.
Yeah,
that should be COBOL, the serverless COBOL.
Rock. COBOL was one of the few languages where it took like 500 lines to print Hello World that you could do in C in like 3 lines, you know? It's like,
hey, wait. Do not mess with Grace Hopper. Just saying.
We need a Netflix series called the COBOL Collection.
I mean, I think by then we should have at least 3 layers of abstraction so that it takes like months to even track down the vulnerability or the, you know, what broke. Like the backend system that was running the Lambda function that was then running a Docker Kubernetes setup hybrid is like, you got to go 3 layers back to like, oh, that's what broke. It was the ye olde kernel that we never updated because we were worried about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about the EPA getting hacked.
Let's go.
Oh, indeed. Boy. This is going to be fun.
But they didn't.
The EPA has now become a EPA Superfund cleanup site. I'm just kidding. But yeah, so basically the EPA is facing a data leak. This is USDOD, who that name rings a bell on breach forums. So I'm guessing it's a black hat. And yep, there you go. There's the breach forum screenshot. Essentially, this looks like it was a third party.
Wait. Look at the headline, though. It's been updated.
That's a cute cat picture.
Look at that sub headline.
SZA
informed hackread.com that the data was already publicly available.
Yeah.
So you're saying a black hat. Are you saying that a black hat hacker would go on the internet and tell lies and try to sell something that was already publicly available? Because I find that hard to believe.
Three lines. Whoever's driving this, scroll 3 lines. Regarding the data leak, the hacker told HackRead the leak contains the entire database, but indicates the data. I thought the hacker at some point said, oh, hey, by the way, no, I didn't hack anything. It's this is all public.
Yeah, he says that down later in the article, I believe. Like, yeah. I think it's shortly after the update.
It's one of those painful things where somebody spent all this time on this story, like days writing this story, and then it was like, oh, I had this great story with this great headline, and it turns out
it's still a great headline because it is, having spent a decent amount of time on these kinds of forums, and by the way, USDOD is a breach forums user that did breach the InfraGard site.
Tons of stuff.
So this is like a pretty well-known user, which is probably why it picked up in the news. But I will say, having spent a lot of time on these forums, 90% of the data is repackaged from somewhere else, or maybe more than 90%. So it's pretty funny that, you know, if you're an enterprising hacker yourself, you can just scrape public data and sell it. And that's genuinely been some of the more popular breaches. The Twitter one, the recent LinkedIn one, it's just like public data. People are like, oh, it has zip codes and addresses. It must be private and breached. It's like, no, turns out this was just required for the government to display who all their vendors are, right? Which makes sense. But I mean, I think it's interesting to talk about, you know, why does the government have to show all this data off, I guess? As, you know, this is classic US government thing. Like, you know, why is all of our, what houses we bought public record? I don't know. Like, I that doesn't make any sense to me, but it's the law. So, yeah, maybe this will drive some change of, like, maybe we shouldn't just list all the vendors and all their contact numbers and their addresses. Or maybe that's fine. But I will say the main one that's kind of sketch is the staff, right? All the names and job titles of all the people who work at all these companies is just unnecessary to expose, probably, but probably required for some regulatory, you know, thing that exists.
No, I think that's what it was.
Boy, that killed the mood, didn't it?
You must all work for the EPA. What? You guys all work? What, are you all EPA vendors or something? What's going on?
No. It sucks. You're right. It sucks. And I think part of the thing, but, you know, I've watched, you know, friends or colleagues, go and basically say, wait a second, the government, you know, like, we got 3 different branches of government or 3 different say state agencies, and they were able to pull, you know, they were able to pull like first and last and, you know, whatever, some other piece from one public dump. Grab that mortgage record for another public dump. Grab something else from another public dump. And by the time you get to the end, well, gosh, that collated data ends up being really, really valuable to somebody. And I think that part of the reason government does this, or that we didn't realize the government doing this for the last whatever, probably 100 years, was that before it was all put on the internet, and that fast and easy to automate pulling it all together and publishing it, the danger of making some things public record wasn't seen. So there's
probably some vendor that's been pulling this data and selling it, and they're like, no, they found out. Darn.
Well, I think a big problem
goes our whole business model.
I think a big problem is a lot of like this information being collected. A lot of people will say it's stuff like the Freedom of Information Act that allows them to do it. But that act was created at a time when the internet was kind of just an idea at the time still.
Yeah.
And they didn't realize how far reaching our information was going to become. So what sounded a good idea at the time turned into now what is a nightmare, because now everybody thinks that all information should be free for everybody.
All right, one pun, then we're moving on. Let me put on my tin foil hat. All right, let's talk about someone getting caught for doing illegal things. So this is the article published by the U.S. Attorney's Office, Central District of California. A SoCal man was arrested on federal charges alleging he schemed to advertise and sell Hive malware. So essentially, they've arrested a San Fernando Valley man on charges alleging a scheme to market and sell malware that gave the malware purchasers control over victim computers. This is basically, he's 24. He was arrested without incident on Wednesday. No flash drives were harmed in the creation of this article. Mm-hmm. Let's see. So if you bought this, you would receive Hive Rat to protected computers. He would transmit it to the computer, gain authorized control over the computer, and browse files, record keystrokes. I mean, this is like, it's a rat, right? So it's like log me in, but you get it from a guy in an alleyway, and you can get arrested for distributing it. I guess, what is the difference between this and like a remote, RMM tool? Like, I'm genuinely like reading the capabilities of Hive Rat, it sounds exactly like log me in.
Sounds like a useful tool.
So it's like, I guess I'm like, what determines whether this is actually malware or whether it's just a, if I wrote log me in and I was selling it to people myself, could I be prosecuted for selling malware? Or is it just all a marketing thing that he shouldn't have marketed it as, unauthorized access?
I guess it's intent.
Sounds like it's a marketing thing.
It's intent.
Yeah.
I mean,
they self-described it as a hacking tool. So therefore it is a hacking tool. That's how you make that distinction.
Mention the word hacking.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
I shudder to think if a jury had to determine that, like if you asked a jury to say whether a body of code based on behavior was or was not malware, and that was like step one, what world would we live in?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it could steal passwords without permission. That's probably the key, the without permission thing, because as much as LogMeIn can do all these things, it does prompt you and say, would you like to give over control of your computer to someone else? And you have to click yes.
And maybe most people
I pop a pop-up that says yes, no, and it seems like something a user meant to do.
Maybe
it's not,
maybe so.
Not malware.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your passwords?
Yeah. Yes.
They give you permission. It's not a crime.
It's honestly an interesting concept. Like, if you were marketing one of these tools, but being very careful with what you said it could and couldn't do, could you still be prosecuted for distributing malware? Or is it just like, because we know that significant amounts of fraud and scams take place using legitimate RMM tools, right? We've talked about it many times on the show, Rust Desk or AnyDesk or LogMeIn or any of those get used all the time for like, hi, I'm the IRS. I need your bank account information so I can, pay your taxes or whatever. And then they just, they don't use C2s and evil tools for that. They just use legitimate tools. Obviously, it's still illegal, but yeah. Interestingly enough, the person that was arrested didn't even code the malware. They were just in an agreement with the malware author. So But he, I guess if so someone contacts you and say they have a sweet new app startup and it's called Hive Rat, maybe don't go through with it.
So what, he was the malware sales rep?
Yeah, he was the malware sales rep.
Yep.
Okay.
He was the POC, and he's the one that gets the jail time.
Yeah.
It's actually super common with malware prosecution that they'll take down most of the organization and charge as many people as they can and then see which of those progresses to a conviction. Yeah. So we've seen it since the late 90s, even before Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, they would just charge anyone and everyone that was affiliated and then see what sticks.
I mean, in this day and age, you charge that many people, somebody's bound to want to give you more information to get some time off on their own.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So it's,
I think it's all about intent. And actually, Cyber Now Education actually just posted that in the Discord, that the last clause in Section 1030. A5A has the words intent to cause damage, right?
So what if I'm selling Flipper Zeros?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
what's your intent?
Just, we should put the disclaimer out there. None of us are lawyers, but, you know, we like to play them on podcasts occasionally, you know.
Indeed.
Glong, glong.
Yeah.
Long order.
And sometimes we might actually give you better advice than your lawyer if the matter is about malware.
Yeah. Guy has the worst lawyers. Yeah.
Don't use our advice to construct your investment choices.
please don't. We don't want to see you on the YouTube video screaming, "I was just only the salesman." Like, we don't want to see that. So, yeah.
Did need the little disclaimer that just says this tool is only used for educational purposes. That solves all legal troubles from what I hear.
Well, it goes right to the intent question. My intent was education, man. What's the problem?
Yeah. Does anyone want to talk about the Sisense that Jay posted, or do we want to talk about HackspaceCon?
I'm envious because I wasn't there at Hackspace. Was everybody else HackspaceCon?
What is HackspaceCon?
I actually did a talk there on hacking APIs.
Excellent. I heard that NASA didn't have very good Wi-Fi, which just I'm so sad about.
Yeah, the Wi-Fi was awful.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah. If anybody
from NASA have a lot of latency? Was it going up to satellite?
They didn't set up enough service for the people they were having.
The word that I heard was they under-provisioned the subnet. They only put /24 out for 600 hackers, which, you know, it's like, guys, come on. So you were cycling IPs, all right? That's what I heard. Just a little rumor. So that's a bummer for them because that's not a good look.
It was a moment of, hey, can I borrow the internet for a second? I need to give my talk. Like, I can't even imagine how bad that would suck.
Well, I think the access point was reset to only allow folks that were actually giving talks access to the internet at a certain point in time. So, and mostly everybody was kind of like outside, just, you know, catching some sun and the Wi-Fi.
There's a lot of problems in what you just said. First of all, just to unpack that, you said access point singular. Okay. 600 people.
I don't know how many. I'm just assuming it was one access point. It could have been more, but I don't know.
But you might be right. But I'm going to go with your hypothesis. Yeah.
I think let's just say they were
one access point, 600 people.
They were trying to make it feel like the old days where you couldn't really access the internet effectively and you had to borrow it from other people because, you know, your mom was on the phone, so you couldn't get on the internet. That's how it is.
The last time I was at Kennedy Space Center, it was managed Aruba Wireless. There was like Aruba through that whole space.
I'm guessing they didn't let them use it. They were probably like, bring your own Linksys routers. You're on your own. Good luck.
They might have. You never know. But what I will say, it was a good conference, though. All in all, outside the internet, it was a good conference. It was great to see so many people in person again. And some new faces as well, too, that were like interested in getting into cybersecurity. Well, I'll say cybersecurity, but getting into the security industry, right? So it was always good to see that and people eager to actually for information. So I was happy about that.
Would you say that space was successfully hacked? Because it seems like you can't really hack space. I was confused by the name of the...
I mean, hack space because it's at Kennedy Space Center.
Right. I heard that Elon sent a rocket up while you guys were there too.
That was amazing. I did take video of that though. That was pretty cool. That's the first rocket launch I've like ever seen. So it was a good experience. So it looked like a big
the
like,
rocket have all the packets
the
on it.
Yeah, the rocket had a Starlink satellite on it to help out NASA with that.
Oh my goodness!
Oh, it makes sense.
I mean, the issue with the internet's in the name, though. They said like it was. They named the thing Hack SpaceCon. SpaceCon got hacked. We're good. Story like their internet was.
It was a good conference. It was a good conference. But all in all, a couple of things. Yeah, but all in all, a good conference. Had a good time. I'm geared up for Wild West Hackfest, folks. If you got talks to submit, make sure that you submit them. Today's the deadline, just like the taxes. I did submit my talk. I'm super. Fingers crossed. But yeah, I'm definitely trying to be in the facility.
And we can't congratulate.
And for the record, we're not interested in seeing your 1040 return. So don't submit that by accident.
Okay. I promise. I promise I didn't send that.
But, hey, what was your talk on? What was your Hackspace API- gun talk? Yeah,
Hacking APIs for real. So what I did touch on at Hackspace Con, I did an honorable mention to the legacy called SOAP. But I talked on REST API, but I did more of a focus on GraphQL. I did show a little bit more GraphQL than REST. And I will say this while we're on the show, my talk for Wild West Hackfest I submitted is on API hacks, but this is more related to more GraphQL and gRPC.
Nice.
Very nice.
Does anyone know if the talks from Hackfest will be posted? Was the internet good enough to post any of the talks, or were they recorded?
They did stream it live. Once I get the link, I'll put it in our Discord. I'll put it in the Discord. And folks, if you're not joined up with the Discord, please join the Black Hill Security Discord. A lot of fun folks in here. Like, seriously.
And we got B-Side Charm coming up this weekend.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Who's going to Charm this weekend?
I'll be there. I know Jason's going to be there.
Man,
the Black Hills Information Security crew will be there.
There's going to be.
Yeah.
Where's Anti-Siphon. Charm? Is it Baltimore?
Yep, Anti-Siphon will have a booth there. Yeah, it's okay. Kind of. It's in Towson, but you can call it Baltimore.
I thought you were saying kind of.
No, it's in Towson.
There's likely to be some backdoors and breaches tournaments going on at B-Side's Charm, I imagine.
I'm going to have to drive by.
I got a question. Will the Bears be there this time? I love those Bears, by the way. I do. I love the Bears. No. The Bears are so cool.
No.
I don't know if Jason can talk
anybody into wearing that thing right now.
Those bear costumes.
Bears will be there. I don't know if they'll be
giant costumes. They are ridiculously hot.
Yeah, there will be bears.
I'm a fan of the Bears. Okay.
I don't know if they'll be there from official capacity, but they will be there.
Uh huh.
They'll be there. They might be stuck on a mannequin in the corner.
I just like to lay out the disclaimer that BHIS does not condone all forms of bears that will be at this fest. And I'm sure that there will be people running around in bear costumes fighting each other that are not sanctioned by BHIS. But
every couple webcast furries just has to come up, doesn't it?
No, I was going to say real bears. It's a real threat.
Oh, real bears. We do have them in the mountains out here in Maryland. So, I mean, they could wander.
If you see a black bear, you should fight it with hand-to-hand combat. That's what I've learned.
If you see a furry, you should treat it with respect. But if you see a black bear, you fight it with hand-to-hand combat. If you see a grizzly, you run. You do what we do, you run your ass off.
If we see a furry, invite him to play Backdoors and Breaches. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, but don't fight them. Only if you can confirm that it's a real bear. If it starts chewing you, your leg off, it's a real bear.
If it's not brown, a
bear. If it goes and breaches, it's a real bear.
Yeah, if you say back doors and breaches,
and it growls, that's a real bear. Run. Literally.
All right. The show is now over. Thank you, everyone, for attending. Yes. See you all at B-Sides Charm or wherever. And I hope everyone has an amazing week. Watch out for those APIs and bears.